From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio, and we're talking about climate today. In particular, an interesting new development that we'll hear about from the Climate Alliance for the Common Good. And joining us for the hour is that organization's executive director, Tom Schlesinger. Tom, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thanks, Ezra. Glad to make it. I appreciate being invited.
So I don't want to bury the lead. We'll hear, much more detail about this new development with Climate Alliance for the Common Good later. But in pretty broad strokes, what is the new toolkit that we're here to talk about?
As we were looking around, we pretty much function in the Cooley region here, and we noticed that the 8 or 10 really big organizations, the trains, the universities, the FSPA, Organic Valley, the city, the county, they've all hired someone along the lines of a sustainability coordinator that will guide them on their journey towards renewable energy and towards this new economy away from carbon. And so they have real expertise in what they should do and how to make a plan to get there. The other 99% of organizations in town, everyone from small to medium-sized organizations, have basically no guidance on what they should do, unless they somehow like carve out or dedicate a part of a resource and tell them, go figure out all the things that are out there and which things save money and which things are costly and which things are really effective and which things aren't. And we just figured that's way too much work, and so it basically doesn't happen. So we got funding from the La Crosse Community Foundation, from Train Technologies, and from Gunderson Health to develop a small business sustainability kit. So the heart of it is about 20 pages long, and it walks you through all the looking at your business and what kinds of things can we do that will both save money and help the environment and avoid climate change. Being very, very aware of distinguishing which things have quick paybacks and which have longer paybacks, which things cost much, which things don't cost much, that kind of thing. So it's a one-stop shop, and that just doesn't exist. There's actually fairly few of these around the country that we've found. And so we've developed it, and it's present on our website now.
And we'll talk in greater detail about some of the specifics, but where do people go to find the new toolkit?
So our website is Climate Alliance, CG, as in common good, .org. Climate Alliance, CG.org. And that is our homepage. And you'll see at the top there a link to the toolkit. Click on that. And we just ask you to fill in your name and email so we can track who's using it. Doesn't go anywhere. We don't use it for marketing. And then you download the toolkit. And because it was funded by in-county resources, it's free to everyone in the county. We do ask for donations for people from outside the county.
As I said, we'll talk about more about what the toolkit has in it. But it seems interesting that those larger organizations who have these staff positions, now it's kind of cool to be able to offer this to the rest of us, so to speak.
Yeah,
and it seems like it might be a little bit of a money saver, because that can be really cost prohibitive to actually hire somebody or even to like pay a consultant part time to help you with this kind of work.
It is. And basically, consultants don't exist, at least in our area. You can't find someone to come in and help you develop a sustainability plan or a climate change plan. The city, the county, Gunderson, they all have people, but that's expensive. And if you're a small business, there's no way you have the money to do that kind of thing. Even trying to carve out a half a person's position is costly. So this is like free to use, and it's sort of the best of the best. This, we've culled the research. This is what we found is most effective, lowest cost, and is our recommendation for it. And we're also developing a set of tools for the toolkit to help you. So it's a template to help you do planning, some information on how you could market what you're doing, A travel policy. So if you want to put in a travel policy that's greener, what would that look like as a sample one of those? So we have about 10 or 15 different tools for you to choose from to just jumpstart the process.
Tom, you and I have talked over the last couple of years, one or two other times about your work at the Climate Alliance for the Common Good and just about environmental awareness and climate change and those issues. What are I'm interested in sort of the good news and the bad news about what's going on now in the climate change arena, as it were.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, because you see so much on national news right now that can be really discouraging. And there's actually a psychological condition that's referred to as climate anxiety, where people are having trouble sleeping at night or they're getting depressed because they see all this. And this is particularly striking the young, whose future is more at stake than, say, someone like me. And you wouldn't necessarily think so, but that's their number one issue when it comes to, economy or jobs or whatever. No, it's the climate, because it's the well their future jobs. I mean, their future lives. And there's definitely good news and bad news. What do you want to hear first?
Let's hear the good news first. Everybody likes good news.
Okay. So the good news is that we have the technology to pull us back from the brink and save us from the worst of climate change. It exists. We don't have to wait 10 years. We don't have to pin our hopes on something will be developed in the future to do it. We have what we need now to maybe not entirely solve the problem, but make some huge inroads. The catch is, or the bad news is, we are not implementing it quickly enough. So there's great research going on with electric vehicles. And a lot of the problems that people have with current electric vehicles, their range is not long enough, the batteries don't last long enough, they're too expensive. All those things are being solved. Toyota has said they're going to come out with a new kind of battery by 2027 that you can charge in 20 minutes. And we'll have twice the range. We'll go twice as far as current batteries do. The single largest source of investment in green industries right now is into the field of batteries, because that's what's been problematic. And so they're coming up with some really good solutions. There's progress being made on almost every front, despite pushback from a lot of areas. Especially some fossil fuel companies, that's their bread and butter, we want to move away from fossil fuels. So there's some pushback from them, but we're making a lot of progress here in the US and around the world. The bad news being we're not making enough progress quickly enough, so that we are still on track to exceed where we really want to be. And there are If we don't change some things and make more progress, there's going to be some really bumpy rides ahead.
I don't want to spend the whole time that we have together chasing too many rabbits. But you brought up batteries, and it's an example, I think, of something that you said that happens where no matter what environmental topic you're talking about, there are areas where people just push back. And one of, when you start talking about batteries, you're talking you get pushback from like people talking about the different products that have to be mined to go into the batteries. When you talk about electric vehicles, people bring up that those vehicles still have to be charged, and that charging does not come without environmental impact. How can people weigh the value of the advance of like the electronic technology that allows them to drive a car on a battery, along with the inescapable reality that there are environmental costs to those things?
And that is true. what we can't ignore is there are tremendous environmental costs to staying with fossil fuels. And the environmental problems that we currently face with some of the green technologies, many of them are being solved. So, lithium mining is problematic because, they have to literally destroy some mountains to get at the lithium they need. In South America, they are recovering lithium from seawater. So there's a new technologies being developed to pull it out of seawater. There are possibilities of other than lithium getting away from lithium as a single source. It used to be that people would always say, but lithium batteries are not recyclable. They're just going into the trash. Well, turns out that some big companies are going into the recycling of lithium batteries because there's so much value in that lithium. And so, for instance, Ford Motor Company signed a very large contract with someone that recycles lithium batteries. There are costs to these things. There are costs to siting wind turbines in certain areas, but they kind of pale in comparison to what happens if we continue to change the climate as drastically as we do. Literally, millions of animals will not survive, species, thousands of species will not survive if the temperature of the climate continues to heat up. The cost of these extreme weather events is huge. FEMA, that funds this emergency management relief, they have run out of money for the year already, and this is October,
Oh,
and so
wow.
they have to. They're requesting a special appropriation from Congress to say we need more money because there's going to be more disasters over the rest of the year so far. There is just a tremendous worldwide cost to climate change. And the climate has only changed 1.1 degrees centigrade, but there's a really good possibility that unless we do more, it will rise by 3 degrees centigrade, which would have, you can imagine, much greater effect and much greater costs. So the costs of this green technology, I'm not going to say they're not there. They are, although a lot of people are working on minimizing that. But the costs of not acting are considerably greater.
There's there another area that people push back in is when you talk about the man-made nature of a lot of these environmental phenomena, which are not controversial among scientists, and yet among the general public, at least in America, they remain controversial. And so a lot of people say, oh, you're talking about changing weather patterns. Okay, so I accept that climate change exists, but I assert that it's just a cyclical phenomenon that would happen with or without the intervention of humans.
So, something over 70% of Americans believe climate change is real, it's caused by greenhouse gases, and it's primarily human caused. That drops by about 10% to 60% of Americans. Pardon me, only 60% agree that it's human caused. 70% say climate change is occurring. 60% say it's human caused. Scientists don't have that disagreement. As you said, 99% of scientists believe that it's real and human caused. So the analogy I like to use, if you're the we're a member of the public, is if you had a really serious heart condition, or better yet, your child had a really serious, not better, I'm sorry, better example,
Yes. I
your
knew what you
child.
meant, Tom.
Okay, I just had to be clear. Your child has a really serious heart condition, and you went to 99, you went to 100 different cardiologists to get their opinion. And 99% said you needed very serious open heart surgery or the child's life would be compromised for the rest of their life. What would you do? But there's one person out there that says, there was an article in Fox News, or I shouldn't say Fox, there was an article in social media that I saw that said herbs would solve this. What would you do for your child? Would you go with the 99 cardiologists, or would you go with that one social media post?
Yeah, it puts it in a different perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I especially like to ask people, you may be willing to take a risk and say climate change is not going to seriously impact you. But picture in your mind for a moment, what is the thing you care most about in this life? And say, are you willing to take that risk with that thing that you care the most about? Their future. Are you willing to put it at risk because of your basic understanding when the scientific world has a different view?
Now, as part of your work with the Climate Alliance for the Common Good, I know that you do educational presentations of different kinds, and you must have come across at these presentations people who are some more and some less accepting of the information that's offered. How do you talk to a person? How can you engage productively with someone who might be not just on climate, but might be of a mindset that tends to dismiss that which is widely accepted and look for that outlier perspective and
Yeah.
wants to buy into every time they hear one sort of outlier, either scientist or medical person or economist or whatever, and they latch on to that small thing, like they've found the one hidden secret.
Right. And there are those people. I will say, our strategy is not to try and talk to the converted. So I don't go to environmental groups and talk. I try and go out into the community and meet with groups that already meet, so that I get a broader mix. So I go to service organizations. There's like seven different Rotaries here in town. There's Kiwanis Club. There's obviously a lot of churches, so we make a number of church presentations. But self-selection occurs in many cases. So in a lot of cases, the people that don't want to hear the message don't come to that meeting because they know that's what's going to be talked about. There have been some people at many meetings that are less convinced. I've only had a couple real, the term that's commonly used is climate deniers or climate skeptics. I've only had a few of those. And I talked for a few minutes about some of their ideas. But then I have to move on because I quickly, in the beginning of one of my talks, I ask how many people don't believe in climate change or believe it's not really going to affect them, or they're kind of worried, but not too worried, or they're really concerned and alarmed by it. And what I find is people are in those higher numbers, those higher categories, by and large, 90% to 10%. They don't know what to do. They don't know what they can do. They feel powerless and helpless, but they do believe climate change is happening, and that really echoes the public opinion polls that are out there. Only about 20% of Americans are actually climate skeptics. 80% believe climate change is happening. They're not all convinced it's human caused, but we do know whether or not it's human caused or not. We do know that if we put less carbon dioxide into the air and methane, that the temperature of the earth will not continue to increase. So did we talk? Can I get a couple minutes to talk about the basic mechanism of why the earth is heating?
Yes, certainly.
So if you picture the earth as being wrapped in a blanket, actually a nice feather comforter wraps the entire globe. And that has been a good thing for thousands and thousands and thousands of years because that has given us a narrow temperature, between negative 10 and 100 degrees or something, that we can survive and prosper in. And, it could be a just a fluke that we're the one planet with that one narrow band of temperatures for life to survive. Or if you're a religious person, you could say it's God's creation that gave it to us. And by having a thin band of greenhouse gases around the Earth, it maintains just the right level of temperature for human life and life on the planet to exist. What we found is that band of greenhouse gases that's composed of primarily carbon dioxide and methane, which is what we think of as natural gas when we have natural gas. And when the Industrial Revolution occurred, we started using fossil fuels and burning fossil fuels to power the Industrial Revolution. So that was actually a good thing. For years and years, it gave us the level of prosperity we have today in the Western world. What we didn't realize is all that smoke and carbon dioxide and methane that goes up into the air makes that feather blanket thicker and thicker and thicker. So if you were under a 1-inch feather blanket when you started the night, and every hour someone came and added another inch and another inch and another inch, so that the morning you were under 10 inches of feather blanket, you would probably be pretty warm. And that's what's happening to the Earth. So if we put less greenhouse gases, mainly carbon dioxide, into the air, we will make that feather blanket thinner, and the Earth will continue to exist at its normal temperature. But we have to stop burning fossil fuels for that to happen. And that's difficult, because the prosperity of our economy up until now has been premised on burning fossil fuels. And that's a difficult habit to break.
Tom Schlesinger is our guest. He's executive director of the Climate Alliance for the Common Good. We've been talking about climate. In particular, we're discussing today, and we'll discuss it more in depth after this timeout. We're discussing a toolkit that the Climate Alliance for the Common Good has put together for small businesses in the Cooley region to be able to implement some positive changes. And some advice on exactly how to do that. We'll continue that discussion after a quick break. If you'd like to get in touch with our program, I always love hearing from you. You can email me, newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our program continues in a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse on the campus of UW La Crosse at WPR's Southwestern Wisconsin studios. Thanks very much for joining us today for a conversation about climate with Tom Schlesinger from the Climate Alliance for the Common Good. Tom, we've been talking about this toolkit that is available to small businesses in the Cooley region. Why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of that?
Yeah, that's posted on our website, and our website is Climate Alliance CG, as in Common Good, .org. It's Climate Alliance CG. You can also just get to it if you type in Climate Alliance La Crosse, which take you right to it. And then on the homepage along the top, you'll see toolkit. You click on that and it will ask you for your name and email, just so we can track who's using it. It's entirely safe. Your email is not going to go anywhere. I promise you, drives me nuts when that happens, if someone steals my email. So I personally guarantee, I personally can vouch for it, your email will be safe with us.
ClimateAllianceCG.org. And our conversation with Tom Schlesinger continues in a moment here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers on WPR. I'm Ezra Wall with Tom Schlesinger, and we're talking about the climate today. And we've referenced a few times and talked a little bit about a toolkit that's available to small businesses. And Tom, you talked about wanting to put this together because because the biggest employers in the area really all have people whose job it is to make sure that their companies are behaving in a more and more increasingly responsible way with the environment and with climate change in mind. And yet for small businesses and small organizations, that's really cost prohibitive. So this is meant to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. What are some of the useful things that people are going to find when they download your toolkit?
So, for instance, it's going to talk about solar and the advantages and disadvantages of it. Solar is great right now because, believe it or not, it is the cheapest form of energy available today. So cheaper than oil, cheaper than natural gas, much cheaper than coal, cheaper than nuclear. So businesses will move to solar, and they are already on their own by market forces because businesses save money by going solar.
Let me interrupt you because I have a question about that. Is solar because of naturally occurring market trends cheaper, or does this have to do with subsidies or some kind of incentive program to get more people involved in it?
It was cheaper already before the Biden IRA, Inflation Reduction Act, but that has made it considerably cheaper. So instead of, in the case of a home, you might have faced a 10 to 14 year payback on solar. Now you're probably down to 8 to 10 years with all the incentives. The incentives last for 10 years starting last year, and they can lower the cost by 30% for businesses and small nonprofits. So take advantage of it now. I mean, put it in now because the federal government is making it especially inexpensive for you. So there's no reason not to do it. And we generally recommend going with the local installer so that if there's any kind of problems or something, that they're right here to help solve it. But solar is one of the most popular things out there right now as a solution. And because it's such a good deal, businesses are already moving towards it.
I sidetracked you from talking about what's in the toolkit as soon as you started talking about solar.
Oh, yeah.
What else is in that toolkit?
So another thing is, okay, let's see, you have solar, that gives you electricity, right?
Yes.
It doesn't do anything for heating your building. It handles the air conditioning of your building, right? But doesn't do anything for the heating. Because for almost all of us, we heat with natural gas. There is a new technology. It's not new, I take it back. There's a technology that's been out there for quite a while that has vastly improved over the past 20 years. And that is called a heat pump. And that is much more efficient than using natural gas. Because natural gas, what happens is you burn natural gas to create a flame, and that creates heat. And then we use a fan to blow that heat throughout a building. It's one of the most common forms, called a forced air system. A heat pump is cheaper because you know what a heat pump does? There is heat in the air even when it's 30 degrees out, right? Because you know what it feels like when it's 30 degrees out, and you know what it feels like when it's negative 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Negative 10 is definitely colder than 30.
Way colder.
Right? So that means there is heat in the air when it's an air temperature of 30 degrees, right?
Yes.
So what it does is a heat pump moves the heat from the outside air to the inside of a building, and it pumps out the cold air. So it's cheaper because all it's doing is moving the heat around. It's not creating new heat. Unlike a gas system that's burning a flame, a heat pump is not creating new heat. It's just moving it around. And one of the really nice things is that process is entirely reversible. Because in the summertime, you can use a heat pump it will work just the opposite way. when it's 80 degrees, there's still cold air in there, in that air. And so it will pump the cold air into the house and the hot air out. And so you can say, okay, but what happens when it is 10 degrees outside and there's less heat in the air? The heat pump will continue to function. It will be less efficient at that point because it's harder for it to pull the heat out of the winter air, the really frigid winter air. And on the really, really cold days, electric heat coils will kick in to help the heat pump out. But it's effective down to like temperatures of negative 10, negative 20 kind of thing. So heat pumps are getting better every year. And there's something called a cold climate heat pump, like for our area of the country, mm-hmm. that work especially well in cold temperatures. So there's that kind of thing about your building and how to do more with renewables. Probably the cheapest solution, the most cost-effective solution when it comes to all this work is energy efficiency, right? Energy you don't use is money that goes directly to your bottom line. So there's a lot in there about how you can, in the toolkit, about how you can be more energy efficient. Insulation does that for you. Smart appliances do that for you. Energy Star appliances. There's a whole raft of things. LED bulbs. I think everyone's made this. I think probably everyone has made the switch to LED bulbs now, but that's another no-brainer. But in the building section of the toolkit, there's a lot of the types of things about how to be more energy efficient. We have a section on transportation. Some of it is say allowing more employees to work from home saves energy. You know, we're not just talking about buying EV cars because nobody can just flip a switch and change their fleet over to electric, right? But letting people work at home saves a lot. There's a whole raft of strategies you can use that makes so that cars are made less use of. Or transportation like planes. There's strategies in there about how to avoid plane travel or minimize it. Or there's actually some airlines that plan more energy, use more energy efficient planes, that kind of thing. So there's a section on transportation and low cost, low pollution commuting. Procurement, sustainable procurement. So trying to work with companies that supply you that are greener or more sustainable. That drives market forces. If there's more demand for sustainable supplies, that will drive up that market and that will drive that industry that direction.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question about some of the things that will require either small or even large purchases. Mm-hmm. You when you were talking about solar, you talked about how to sort of look at that schedule and figure out how long a thing will take to pay for itself. But whether you're talking about changing the way you heat and cool your building, or whether you're talking about just replacing existing bulbs with LED light bulbs or something like that, how do you compute how much that thing costs up front and figure out from that how long it's going to take to create value?
With those big ticket items in particular, we don't generally recommend that you just take your existing furnace and throw it out and replace it with a heat pump. Mm-hmm. It's when your existing furnace is at the end of its life, like a residential furnace lasts from 20 to 25 years.
Okay.
But as it approaches its end of life is when you want to start thinking about switching over. It's not even good for the environment if everyone would switch to EVs and junk their old cars. That would use too many new raw materials and too much new manufacturing process and put more carbon into the air. So as things near the end of their life cycle is when you want to replace them. Same thing with cars. And then all the vendors, as you work with them, can tell you how to figure the payback. So I had some solar people come out to my house and evaluate it. And they gave me clear estimates of when the payback would be. Turns out I live in a coulee and I have too much shade because I have tall hills on both sides of me. I have too much shade to put in solar panels, which was a big disappointment to me personally. But Xcel has a program called Renewable Connect, where you can sign up to use electricity from one of their big solar array fields. You know, these areas out in the country where there's just acres and acres of solar panels. Those are usually owned and managed by energy companies, utilities. And so I signed a contract with Xcel, and they guarantee that the amount of electricity that I use, they will build out that amount of solar capacity. So the more people that sign up to use that, the more solar panel fields will they build.
And does
And
that,
so,
is there a cost affiliated with that in addition to
yeah,
what your normal
it's.
consumption cost would be?
Yeah, exactly. There is, in the case of a house, it's fairly minimal. I think it's $7 to $10 a month. So you can go solar in your house in like 3 or 4 days' time by just contacting them and signing this contract. And the longer term contract you sign, the lower price per kilowatt hour it is. It was $7 to $10 a month for my house. But like if you're talking a church or something with a big space, you're talking a little bit more money. And so they, you know, I know some churches have done it, but it was a little bit bigger outlay for them in that
Okay.
case to do that. And in that case, Xcel is making the money on going solar, getting the real advantage of that in terms of cost. But at least the homeowner is going solar and not making the problem worse. There are other types. There's communities that can go solar by building their own arrays. In other states, Wisconsin currently has regulations that prevent communities from doing that. Only utilities can sell solar power for electricity in Wisconsin, and so that's an issue that's up for debate right now.
So I want to talk about I want to talk about some of the common things that come up in your discussions and in your education of people with about climate change. What are kind of the common misconceptions that people have about either climate change or sustainable living or any of the things that we've been talking about today?
One of the most common things I run into is people say, but isn't this change in weather patterns and climate, isn't that just natural variation? I know I've read about it. It's happened in the past. So what's the big deal? How do we know this is any different now than it was before? And that is something that has been studied a lot, and it ends up is not comparable. There was a European ice age back around 1300 where Europe experienced colder temperatures due to a range of fairly regional factors. But the difference was the entire Earth was not heating up on average. That was just Europe in that case. The last time we had a major ice age was like 10,000 years ago. And it takes thousands of years for the climate to change. Oh, I did want to make a distinction. There's a difference between weather and climate, and that people sometimes kind of gloss over. Weather is what we have in Wisconsin, changes basically hour to hour, right? And it's fairly local. Like, you know, you get rain in La Crosse and it doesn't rain in Onalaska. That's weather. Climate is something that is lasts over a longer period of time. So North America has a climate. It's a general range of temperatures. It's a general amount of precipitation. And climates are very stable. They change very slowly over thousands of years of time. We had an ice age 10,000 years ago, but it happened over thousands of years. The change in global temperatures that have occurred now have occurred over the last 200 to 300 years. We've never, ever seen that rapid of a change before in the history of the Earth, because we can do core samples and things, we can get an idea of what temperatures were way long ago. So whatever started back around 17 or 1800 changed the system and has continued to change the system. The big monumental change that happened back 1700 and 1800s was the Industrial Revolution, when we began to burn fossil fuel. But even then, the trend did not really accelerate till after World War II, when all the economies took off, the Western economies took off and began burning really large amounts of fossil fuels. Everybody had cars, everybody had heat at home. Everyone used air conditioning. And at that point, you see temperatures really began to spike, and carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere began to rise at that time too. So a lot of study has pointed out that this is not the same kind of climate change that has occurred before. What's happening now is not random, it's caused by human activity. So that's one of the big questions I get.
It's an interesting comparison between climate and weather, and it comes up every winter in La Crosse, as you probably know. When the first time it dips below zero, everybody in the neighborhood with a sense of humor makes some comment about Al Gore and says, "Ah, oh, so much for
Yeah,
global warming."
that's right. That's right. I always wondered if that's one reason they moved away from the term global warming. I'm not sure. But
It
climate
could
change
be.
is a little more descriptive,
Yes.
because global warming means, on average, when you look at the entire surface of the Earth. But what we know is the oceans heat more slowly than the land. So while the global temperature has gone up just 1.1 degrees centigrade, the land temperature has gone up, I don't know exactly, 3 to 4 degrees. And if you go in certain areas, is even more so. Las Vegas is the fastest heating city in the nation. So their temperatures are getting hotter faster than anywhere else, and that's happening a lot through the Southwest, which is, see, what happens is, as the temperature rises, so you can say, yeah, more hot days. So what? I'll stay in the air conditioning. But when the temperatures increase in really broad areas, more water evaporates and goes from the land and the water into the atmosphere. So suddenly, the atmosphere is holding a lot more water than it has ever before, and it holds it for these long periods of time until it doesn't. Until when you get one of these atmospheric rivers, like you've seen in California with this pat over the past year, where it just deluges. It just You have these huge, heavy rainfalls, heavier than have ever occurred before, where they get, a year's worth of rainfall in a day. And so the heating that's occurring, the warming of the planet, means there's more evaporation of water into the atmosphere, but it's not going to hold it forever. It can't hold it forever. At some point, something triggers it, and all the water that's being held up in the sky drops down, and it's a lot more water than it's been. So rising temperatures mean there's more big storms, and more those storms are stronger than they have ever been. One of the more interesting statistics I've seen is the number of billion-dollar weather events that we've had. So back in 1980, on average, the US had about 2 to 3 billion-dollar weather events per year. Last year, we had over 20.
Well, we've talked about how businesses can take action, and we'll give that website again here in a moment. But if somebody's wondering, we've just got a couple minutes left. Like, what's the biggest, most impactful thing or couple of things that one person can decide to do?
Funny you should mention that. So on our website, on the homepage, you scroll down a little bit and you can say, I'm an individual or I'm an organization. And if you click, I'm an individual, you'll get these 10 topic areas of what an individual can do. And we'll talk about the most impactful things. One of the most impactful things is to get a voice and speak up, meaning to your elected officials. I don't care if you're liberal or conservative. I don't care if you write a Republican or a Democrat, but let them know that you care about climate change, because right now they think most people don't care. So why should they act? So you don't even have to write about a particular piece of legislation. Just let them know that it's a big issue to you. One of the other areas, though, if you want to say, where can I make a difference in my personal habits and things like that, and not something that's most intuitive, is actually reducing food waste. Food waste goes into the landfill and gets buried, and that buried material generates large amounts of methane gas. Methane gas is about 80 times worse for the greenhouse, for the atmosphere, 80 times worse than carbon dioxide. There's just a lot more carbon dioxide. And so you really want to eliminate methane gas. So not many people know it, but the thing that we call natural gas to heat our homes and our stoves and things like that, that's methane gas that we burn. And every time we do that, we're putting some of that, more of that really nasty stuff into the air. So food waste produces large amounts of it. So make much better use of your food. 30% of the food in the American food system is wasted. So imagine you went to the market and your hands were full carrying three big brown paper bags of food, and you struggle in through the door. And the first thing you do is you walk over to your trash can and you drop one of those bags into the trash. Then you take the other two and you put them in your refrigerator and use them. But you've just wasted 30% of the food. Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
So people are learning a little bit about your organization here from our conversation today. How can they get in touch with you?
Through our website, there's a place to contact us as well. We're an all-volunteer organization, 501c3 nonprofit. But we've been operating as a volunteer organization for over 5 years, and that can be a struggle to try and get the message out. So people are doing this because they're passionate. If you want to help out, we would ask you to consider a donation. There's a donate button on our website, and that would be great and help further our work.
So if people want more information about their own individual habits and impact, or if they want to take a look at this resource that you've been talking about for small businesses and other organizations, give us your website one more time.
So it's Climate Alliance, CG, as in Common Good, .org, or you can just Google Climate Alliance La Crosse, and it will come up. And that has both. If you're an individual, these are the most impactful things you can do. And this is a well-vetted list. We did a lot of research to come up with the most impactful things for you, the individual, so you don't have to feel helpless. And one of the other activities is share what you do, whether you're doing composting or you're buying an electric car, or you're putting in solar panels. Share that with friends and neighbors so they realize that's the new normal. The new normal is to try and reduce carbon going into the air. That's how you change a culture, and that's how you make the big changes. So, yeah.
Tom Schlesinger is Executive Director of the Climate Alliance for the Common Good. Tom, thanks a lot for being on Newsmakers again.
Thank you, Ezra. I've enjoyed my time together.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to hear our conversation with Tom or any of our other episodes again, you can find them all on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers, or you can search for WPR Newsmakers in your favorite podcasting app, and it should come up. There are a couple of opportunities to catch our show on the radio. We're on Fridays at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We're on Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And as I said before, we're always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.